4:03, welcome back. We are watching as the finance minister, Chrystia Freeland, is about to speak on the budget. The government has already made a lot of announcements, more than a dozen announcements over the past few months, with a huge focus on affordability and housing. Money for a national school food program, new money for mental health, for the Canadian military, for Canadian renters' Bill of Rights. And now we're finally going to hear about the budget today.
Nous sommes arrivés à un moment charnière pour les milléniaux et la génération Z. Ces jeunes ont un talent et un potentiel immense. Ils ont besoin de voir et de croire que notre pays peut fonctionner à leur avantage. Afin de
making the promise of Canada real for younger Canadians requires action from us, and that is what we are delivering.
It begins with building more homes at a pace and scale not seen since after the Second World War. Over the past 3 weeks, we have shared with Canadians our new and ambitious plan to solve the housing crisis and to help ensure that Canadians, especially younger Canadians, are able to afford their rent or mortgage payments. We're investing.
Now that the finance minister has stood up in the House of Commons.
Okay, so that's Vashi Capellos on CTV News Channel. We'll try and see if we can get another feed into what the finance minister is saying. As I mentioned, there have been a lot of announcements, more than 12 of them over the past few months. And when you look at the things that they have promised, the spending tallies up to be more than $40 billion in extra spending. So we should be getting a peek at the actual numbers soon on how they're going to pay for that.
Breaking down regulatory and zoning barriers, providing direct low-cost financing, and making more government land available for building. Dans un pays.
In a country with winters as long and as cold as ours, we are scaling up innovative construction techniques like modular housing to build homes year-round. Modular housing makes Canadian homes less expensive and the Canadian economy more productive. To support all this new housing, we are investing in the infrastructure communities need to grow and increasing the number of construction workers. By creating opportunities for apprentices and recognizing foreign credentials.
We're making it easier for Canadian homeowners to add a basement suite or a laneway house, so middle-class Canadians can be part of the housing solution, too. Mr. Speaker, our work to build more homes faster across our country is quite literally an exercise in nation building, a true Team Canada effort. Together, we are putting into action a plan to build nearly 4 million homes by 2031 and to unlock the door to the middle class for more young Canadians.
While we work urgently to increase the supply of housing, our government is taking action to bring relief to Canadians, especially younger Canadians, by making it more affordable to rent or to buy a new home. This starts with better protecting renters from steep rent increases and rent evictions. It also means making sure they get credit for their on-time rental payments, so they are in a better position to qualify for a mortgage, maybe even at a lower rate, when the time comes to buy their first home.
For first-time buyers, we will be extending the maximum amortization period of a mortgage to 30 years on new builds, including condos. That means lower monthly payments and greater opportunity for young people to get those first keys of their own. Combined with tax-free ways to save for a first down payment through the tax-free first home savings account and the enhanced home buyers plan, the longer amortization period will ensure more younger Canadians are able to afford that first home and take that next big step into a prosperous middle-class life. Mm-hmm. Monsieur le Président.
Mr. Speaker, the second part of our plan is making life cost less. Inflation has now been back within the Bank of Canada's target range for 3 months in a row. Oh. That is good news for Canadians. But more is needed to help reduce the cost of living, to help younger Canadians gain ground. As a government, we've made transformative enhancements to Canada's social safety net.
$10 a day childcare is already saving parents thousands of dollars a year and making it financially possible for more Canadians to choose to start a family of their own. Now we're making further investments, creating even more childcare spaces so more families can benefit and so more mothers don't have to choose between.
All right, so you're just hearing live the finance minister and the deputy prime minister, Chrystia Freeland, speaking about the budget. Now, because the budget has been officially tabled, we can tell you what's in it. Budget 2024 includes some tax changes. In an effort to level the playing field for younger Canadians, in the budget, the government says it is targeting Canada's highest earners with new taxes in a bid to help offset billions in new spending, which they are directing into the country's housing supply and also into social supports. And the Deputy Prime Minister said they want to give Canadian millennials and Generation Z a fair chance at a middle-class life. Let's tune in here to what CTV's Annie Bergeron Oliver has to say. She has been in the lockup all day, and as the Finance Minister is giving this rather lengthy speech outlining the budget, Annie's going to get right down to it and give you the notes on exactly what it entails. Take a listen.
Ottawa promised not to grow Canada's deficit beyond $40 billion, and despite billions in new spending, today's budget delivered on that promise. The deficit this year is $39.8 billion. That's dropping to $20 billion by 2028, 2029, up from $18.4 billion projected in the fall economic statement.
This budget is our path forward. Together, we will unlock the door to the middle class for more Canadians.
The Liberal government is achieving that goal by launching its new revenue generators, including tax changes this year, while many of its new programs aren't projected to start until after the election.
It's very clear when you compare with the previous budget and fall economic statement and this budget that the government doesn't think that moving towards a balanced budget is necessary. They think that spending in areas that they think are important for Canadians.
Among the $52.9 billion in new spending, $1.5 billion over 5 years to launch PharmaCare, $6.1 billion over 6 years for a new Canada disability benefit that would see payments issued starting in July 2025, and $2.5 billion for a new Canada carbon rebate for small businesses that would return fuel charge proceeds dating back to 2019 to about 600,000 businesses.
There are two ways to balance the budget, or at least to minimize the increase in the deficit. One is to increase taxes. The other would have been to reduce program expenditure in the federal government, and there was very little of that that's included.
The government has spent much of the last 2 weeks making pre-budget housing and affordability announcements. Today, more details. Ottawa intends to create student and non-market housing by offloading space in federal lands, offering $1.1 billion over 10 years to Public Services and Procurement Canada to reduce its office space by 50%. The Department of National Defense will explore redevelopment of its properties for military and civilian housing, and the government will look into redeveloping Canada Post properties as well.
I think what they're doing on land is quite smart. We have more Canada Post locations in this country than we have Tim Hortons, so that's a lot of redevelopment opportunities.
But while there were rumors of a potential wealth tax to compensate for new spending, the government instead is increasing the tax rate on capital gains from half to two-thirds, a move that will impact individuals who earn gains of over $250,000, which currently affects about 0.13% of individuals. 12.6% of corporations will feel the impact.
It is a younger demographic that's being financially creamed, and so we needed to look elsewhere to figure out how to raise revenue. This government steps in that direction by saying they want to tax wealth more.
That new tax measure alone is expected to generate about $19 billion over 5 years, and that will help the government pay for some of its new promises. But some economists are concerned about the rising public debt charges, which this year is expected to cost about $54 billion. Annie Bergeron-Oliver, CTV News, Ottawa.
Lots jammed into that pack. Thanks to Annie for putting that together. A long day poring over all those documents, and that's just the big overarching overview from 1,000 feet of what they're trying to get at. Some of the big headlines in that: the major priority on housing, taxing the highest earners, the deficit projected at $39.8 billion. And they're framing this as pursuing tax fairness. That's one of the ways that the Liberals are planning to pay for this plan to bring in new money, new revenue, by asking Canada's very wealthy people to pay more. Funny how they say asking in quotation marks. They're requiring them to pay more. Freeland said today, that's the finance minister, it would be irresponsible to pass on more debt to future generations by ignoring the fiscal anchors that she tied the government to last fall. But with still no projected budget balance and bigger deficits forecasted every year ahead of what was previously projected, now they've decided to tax Canada's wealthy more in order to even things up. So that's one of the big headlines from the budget. Of course, as it goes with the budget, as you kind of sink your teeth into it and you chew on it a little bit more, there are other parts of the budget that are especially interesting to us here in Ottawa. And another part that jumps out to me is that the federal government is going to shrink the public service by 5,000 over 4 years. 5,000 as in 5,000 positions over the next 4 years. So they had already talked about refocusing spending. And in their previous plans, in the fall economic statement that came out as part of last year's budget and last year's fall economic statement, the government said that it had to rein in some travel and consulting expenses. In this budget, it said the second phase of that plan is to decrease the public service by 5,000 full-time equivalent positions. That's down from the current figure of 368,000. And they said that by reducing the size of the federal public service, the government is showing taxpayers that they too are trying to tighten things up, that it's a time where our budgets need to evaluate and reflect what Canadians are going through, which is that we're tightening things up and that we're trying to spend money responsibly. She said it was important, particularly right now, to signal that to Canadians. Josh Pringle was also in the lockup, so he'll join us in studio with a rundown of what the federal budget is going to mean for us locally. 4:18 on the show. And by the way, because now I'm actually seeing the number, you'll understand all of this is coming in right now. It's like trying to drink from a fire hose. Because finally at 4 p.m., boom, they can release all the numbers. The significant component of the budget that I just mentioned, the fact that wealthiest Canadians are going to be taxed more, they'll have to pay up, that revenue stream, the increase in taxes on capital gains, is projected to bring in $19.3 billion over the next 5 years. So it's not an excess profit tax that some people had expected, but it is an increase, and it is a big jump in revenue coming in.
On News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
We're investing to kickstart the construction of more rental apartments and more affordable housing across our country. We're topping up the Housing Accelerator Fund, which is doing exactly what we intended and exactly what Canada needs, cutting through red tape and breaking down zoning barriers.
That's the Finance Minister, Chrystia Freeland, unveiling Budget 2024, which has a very close focus on housing. The budget is now teasing out some of the big announcements that have been made over the last few weeks. One of the big things that was part of it was the promised Canadian Renters Bill of Rights. Doesn't look like there's a timeline on that to be unrolled. There were also some other mortgage and rental rule reforms, like allowing a 30-year period to pay off your mortgage, what's known as the mortgage amortization period for first-time home buyers. They are going to do that. So if you're a first-time home buyer and you're purchasing a new build, you can take 30 years now to pay down your mortgage, and that will be available, according to the government and this budget, by August the 1st of this year, August 1st, 2024. Some other big-ticket housing commitments: a $15 billion top-up to the Apartment Construction Loan Program, $6 billion for a Canada Housing Infrastructure Fund, and as well, $1 billion in loans and $470 million in contributions for a new rental protection fund. Those are just some of the big things that are coming out as well. The Housing Accelerator Fund. This is the big fund that the government has been touting to expedite the building of homes across Canada. It includes a $400 million top up to that, plus $600 million for a series of new home building innovation efforts that are aimed at scaling up modular and prefabricated homes. Jason Burgraff is standing by. He's got the local perspective on housing because he's the executive director of the Greater Ottawa Home Builders Association. Hi, Jason. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me on, Christy.
I'm just running down all of the big ticket items here. And of course, there are other things that pertain to housing, but those are sort of the high level highlights. What's your overall impression of what we've seen in the last 25 minutes?
Yeah, it's just been a flurry of things to consider, but it's very positive for sure, and it seems to be kind of the feds are doing as much as they can do, I think, in the housing space. They've been tinkering, and they've been kind of dipping their toe in the water. You know, it was a number of months ago now where they said, well, we're going to take GST off new apartment construction. And now they're going in and saying, okay, on top of removing that GST, we're going to increase the amount of expenses you can deduct for tax purposes. We're going to increase low-cost financing loans. We're going to make more direct loans, right? We're going to take GST off student residences. So it's clear that certainly on the apartment construction side, they're saying, okay, we're going to pull every lever that we can for rental for-purpose rental supply. I think the other two really big things, as you detailed a lot, is trying to increase the buying power for first-time home buyers. And then the other is probably not going to get as much attention, but could be the most transformative, and that is the money towards the sector transition. So, you mentioned it previously about prefabrication and modular.
Right.
It won't be like full, just full modularization, but even just panelization and factory building of certain parts of houses. The feds seem like they're going to really push that as a, hey, we need to really update and modernize how we build homes on a much bigger scale than what we've been doing so far.
Okay. And Jason, can you just back that up for a moment? Panelized construction, as I understand it, as somebody who's not actually in the industry, but it takes some of the framing work off of the job site, right? Because it simplifies the process. It streamlines it a little bit more.
That's right. So, I mean, most people think of modularization like, almost like just four big big containers, right? And you just kind of put them together like Lego pieces. But panelization is more, you have the entire wall assembly, or you have the entire floor, you have the entire ceiling already done up, and then you put it together, like a gingerbread box, like a gingerbread house, more, you know. So mm-hmm. as opposed to shipping the entire thing, which is difficult to do with our transportation and our highways and what have you. And that you can do a lot faster and build a home a lot faster, typically. The issue, of course, is with use of factories, it takes a lot of money to get that up and running, and you need to constantly have orders coming in and product going out in order to make that a viable option. So it seems that the feds are all in on factory production. Again, not necessarily, you know, full homes that are cut into four pieces, but certainly mm-hmm. a lot of panelization.
So to that point, do we have the money allocated to the factories to build those pieces? And do we have the people to work in the factories to make it happen?
Yeah, that's, I think, the feds are putting the money towards the factories. They've even, in the details, they even got specific factories that they're targeting. But the other nice thing about the factory work is that it then reduces the amount of people you actually need. Now, there's a good balance. You need, you need to hit the right equilibrium of robotic work versus people. But you do, you know, need less people to work in the industry if you increase your robotics, you know, much like, you know, the car manufacturing, right? So part of addressing our labor shortage is also getting more of that factory supply online.
Anything else that's standing out to you that pertains to your industry or any parts of the budget that you feel fell short, parts that are missing?
You know, the really big thing I think right now is first time home buyers, for sure. They're targeting that, trying to get them on an even playing field where they can go in and purchase, have the same purchasing power as someone who already has a bit of money behind them. Again, there's a lot of money for construction of apartments, like for purpose rental, but there isn't, but outside of factory building, there isn't a lot of construction for market housing. Overall. So they're really kind of putting their money behind apartment building and factory when there is a whole other huge segment of stick framing or stick building, as we typically call it, right, that needs to move forward for housing supply as well, especially on that missing middle infill that we want to see.
Great to hear from you today. Thanks so much.
Thanks so very much.
So there's some immediate reaction, and I do mean immediate because the budget just came out in the last 30 minutes. Hearing there from the executive director of the Ottawa Home Builders Association, Jason Burgraff. He's been able to read through it as much as possible and to give us some reaction to those big highlights. We'll have more coming up, including Josh Pringle, who will join us in studio. What is it going to mean, the promised workforce reduction? That's part of the federal budget. It is saying that they're going to shrink the public service by 5,000 positions over the next 4 years. We'll get into that next.
This is Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
It is budget day. Lots of news that is pouring into our newsroom because people like my next guest spent the day in the budget lockup looking through all of the documents and finding the big headlines. Josh Pringle joins me in studio. Hello, my friend.
Good afternoon.
Great to have you back aboard.
It's nice to be back outside.
We had the big headline that we were talking about the housing effort that is underway. We were talking about the taxation on wealthy Canadians. We were talking about the deficit projected at $39.8 billion. But with you, I want to drill down into what it means locally for Ottawa. When I saw the news of a workforce reduction and the fact that in the budget, they're shrinking the public service by 5,000 positions over the next 4 years, That is what stood out to me as the big local headline. Am I right?
Yes. So if you remember back last year in the 2023 budget last spring and in the fall economic update, they signaled $15.4 billion in public sector spending reductions coming up. But there was no detail. So today we're finally getting some details. And the main one coming out of this is they're going to do a public, they're going to reduce the public service population by approximately 5,000 full-time equivalent positions over the next 4 years, down from, so right now there's approximately 368,000 public service positions across all departments, all federal departments. They want to reduce that by 5,000 over the next 4 years. And the budget says, quote, it's going to be mainly through Budget 2024 announces the government will seek to achieve savings primarily through natural attrition in the federal public service. And federal officials describe the elimination of the positions as a modest cut to the public service over the next 5 years. They're saying it's not job cuts we're cutting. It's going to be mostly attrition. The other thing in this as well, and this also falls into the job cuts, is all federal departments and organizations will be required to cover a portion of their increased operating costs within their existing resources starting April 1st next year. So if you want to spend more, you have to find the money within your budgets, which could mean some job reductions to make sure you fit that in. So that's the main headline coming out of this budget locally. We don't know how many of these positions will be in Ottawa, in the National Capital Region, across the country, but this is what the federal government is signaling after, you know, last year saying there were going to be spending cuts. Here it is.
I know that you just basically jogged here. You jumped into a taxi and you've been in the lockup all day, but have you seen anything from the unions representing federal public servants?
Nothing I've seen yet. They were not in the lockup today. I know we're going to have Chris Elward from the Public Service Alliance of Canada on at 6 o'clock tonight on CTV News at 6 with Patricia Bowl, but we have not seen any reaction yet.
Okay, next up, in terms of big local news, I saw that they are talking about some of the federal buildings like DND and also the Canada Post building.
Yeah, so a couple things here. The budget once again signals that Public Service and Procurement Canada will be directed to reduce its office portfolio by 50%, and they're going to look at converting federal office buildings to homes in Ottawa and across the country. The budget has $1 billion over 10 years for PSBC to convert underused federal offices into homes with the focus on student and non-market housing. If you go in a bit further, the federal government says the National Defense Medical Center in Ottawa, which is on Alta Vista Drive over by the Ottawa Hospital, it hasn't been used as a hospital since the 90s. They're now going to look to see if they can turn this building into housing as well. This is one of the federal one of the Department of National Defense buildings they're looking at. They're going to see if they can convert those into housing. And the budget is also signaling that they're going to direct Canada Post to prioritize leasing or divestment of post office properties with high potential for housing. They mentioned Canada Post properties in Manitic and Rockland that could be available for housing. So it really seems, we were talking about this in the budget, it seems like the federal government's just looking at their portfolio saying, where can we find much needed space for housing? And this budget sort of signals we're going to start making more things available for housing moving forward.
Any sort of a timeline on that, on how long those conversions would take?
No conversion. Nothing. It's just sort of, we're going to start looking into this and we'll see where they go.
Okay.
We do know it takes a while to convert these buildings over. So it's not going to be today or in the next year.
Finally, there was some money allocated for policing. What type of policing are we talking about?
So this is for the Ottawa Police Service, specifically for the Ottawa Police Service. They will receive $50 million in new federal funding over the next 5 years to, quote, enhance security around the parliamentary precinct. Federal officials say the Ottawa Police Service will be able to determine how best to use the federal funding, but it must bolster its presence in the parliamentary precinct. So this is on Wellington Street, Spark Street, in between, Elgin and Kent Street. So that's funding. The Ottawa Police Service has been looking for a new funding deal from the federal government, saying costs are escalating. This is funding. There's really no strings attached to the funding, except you must use it to bolster your police in the downtown area, because Wellington Street and Spark Street is the responsibility of the federal government or of the Ottawa Police Service. The buildings fall to the Parliamentary Protective Service.
It was also the red zone during the convoy demonstration back in 2022 along Wellington Street.
Yes. So, and it's also important to note, because the federal government in the 2024 budget, Ottawa Police received $3 million for federal funding. federal officials say that this new money will be in addition to that. All other funding agreements are still there. The police service can still submit the bill for policing protests and demonstrations and presidential visits to the federal government, and they will work to reimburse that, as they do already. So it's just, this is new funding for Ottawa Police to bolster its ranks around the parliamentary precinct.
And finally, then, I think we've just about wrapped it up from the local perspective. The National Arts Centre also came up in budget 2024.
Yeah, the National Arts Centre will receive $45 million in funding over the next 3 years to, quote, ensure continued support for artists and productions across the country. The 2023 budget included $28 million in funding for the NAC for the 23-24, 24-25 budget. This will now be starting in 25-26. They'll get $45 million to help continue its mandate to continue to support Canadian artists. As the budget notes, the NAC is Canada's largest bilingual performing arts center in Canada, supporting over 1,400 art events in Ottawa and across the country every year.
Okay, so building homes, converting underused federal offices into homes eventually.
There's one other thing if you got...
I have about two more minutes.
Oh, so the federal government is moving to give federal employees the right to disconnect from work outside of their regular work hours.
This is interesting because they've done this in other countries.
Well, they've done it in Ontario. Ontario also introduced that thing.
Yes.
So the budget proposes spending $3.6 million over 5 years. I'm not understanding why the $3.6 million, but the government's going to look to amend the Canada Labor Code to require employers and federally regulated sectors to establish a right to disconnect policy, limiting work-related communication outside of scheduled work hours. The budget says, quote, everyone needs some downtime. It is essential for well-being and mental health.
So if you're sick of getting those after-hours emails and you're feeling like you're burnt out, the federal government is planning to protect your right.
If you get an email at 4:47 from an from a reporter asking a question about the budget, you can just be like, day's done. So, but the federal government says up to 500,000 federally regulated employees would fall under this once it's passed, but that's the budget. So they're looking to allow people to disconnect.
In one way or another, the budget is clearly trying to connect with Gen Z and millennials and the pressures that they are feeling with the right to disconnect. You're talking about the pressures to respond after work hours and being attached to your cell phone all the time. Or if you go back to the big overall headline of housing, and that's one of the big key takeaways, they're trying to resonate with a generation that is feeling stressed out about where they can live.
Feeling stressed out and are also looking for the right work-life balance. You know, I think a lot of people learned during the pandemic that's more important than ever before. And we're seeing that more and more. And now you're seeing governments starting to recognize that. The question is, if you put in this policy, how will it be enforced?
How was it being in the budget lockup today?
You know what? I wish it was raining, because then when I look outside and I see the sun and the Canada geese walking along the Rideau River staring at us as we're inside, it's kind of sad.
Good to have you in it, though, to get some of those local highlights.
Oh, it was good. It was a good time. It was nice to work with my CTV colleagues, our CTV colleagues from the Parliamentary Bureau, and yeah, it was a good day.
Josh Pringle with a local perspective on what is in budget 2024. Thanks so much, Josh.
You're welcome.
We will have full coverage continuing throughout the rest of the program. In just a moment, we'll hear from a tax expert on some of those measures that have been sprinkled into the budget, namely the extra money that will be paid by Canada's wealthiest residents and the money that that is intended to bring in as revenue to pay for everything else. After that, we'll find out about the measures for struggling Canadian businesses. Did the Liberals go far enough to help small and medium-sized businesses flourish again in Canada? You know, it's been a really tough go for them. So we will speak to the Executive VP of Advocacy at the Canadian Federation of Independent Business. That's also coming up.
Welcome back to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Budget 2024 was really focused on housing and Canadian millennials and Generation Z, or Generation MZ. The finance minister, Chrystia Freeland, spoke earlier today as she was unveiling the budget. And she said this is about giving Canadians in that demographic a fair chance at a middle-class life. CTV's Omar Sachedina just spoke with a tax expert who was in the lockup all day. His name is Tim Sesnick, and he was poring over the budget documents. He just offered his thoughts on what this budget will and will not do.
Well, I think this budget really did try to address the issue of home affordability, try to get more Canadians to own homes. And there's a couple of things that will impact families that are maybe looking to do that, like the rentals who you'll be speaking with. For example, the home buyers plan has been adjusted. So that's a plan that lets you take money out of your RSP. And previously it was up to $35,000. To put towards a home. Now you have to repay the RSP. But having said that, they've now bumped up that withdrawal limit to $60,000. So you can take a little bit more out of your RSP. And if you're a couple and you each have money in your RSP, that could be $120,000 you could withdraw. You do have to pay it back over 15 years, but at least you can access those funds tax-free to buy a home. The second thing that they've done is if you're a first-time home buyer, they're actually extending the mortgage rules so that you can actually pay back your mortgage over a 30-year period rather than the standard 25-year period. That'll reduce most people's monthly payments to make it a little more affordable to buy a home. So that's probably another change that they've made only for first-time home buyers, having said that as well. I think something else that they've done is the government, starting in 2025, is going to allow individuals or families to make renovations to their homes, to add a second suite to their homes, to create more rental housing in the country. And they're going to extend a loan program to those families where they'll be able to borrow up to $40,000 each, potentially, to create a second suite in a home, which is a very interesting idea. There's no more details on that just yet. They're going to come out with those details over the next few months. Those are some of the key changes. There is one change that will affect many, many people, however, and that relates to capital gains taxes, which are going up. So previously, up until today, half of capital gains have typically been taxable for the last many years. That's now going up to 2/3 of capital gains will be taxable. Now, for individuals, it's only for capital gains over $250,000. So for the average person selling stocks or bonds, it may not impact them. But if you own a second property already, maybe it's a cottage or you own a rental property, something, or an investment property, selling those assets or significant amounts of investments, you're going to pay higher tax rates on those capital gains than prior to this budget. So that's bad news for higher income earners or people who have second properties.
That's a Canadian tax expert, Tim Sesnick, who was in the budget lockup, talking about some of the changes that are afoot in budget 2024. We're coming up to your 5 p.m. news. We'll be right back.